It is a wonderful thing to have the privilege of introducing this next topic of discussion, which is the introduction of the toolkit that emanates from our Rocking the Cradle report. I was very privileged in 2012 to be one of the members of the team that was able to participate in the research and editing of this report. It was done primarily by Robin Powell, whose entrance I am expecting with bated breath and imminently. It is a lengthy tome, as you know, for all of the right reasons. It addresses issues including child welfare and custody, including adoption, both domestic and international, and reproductive rights, all of those issues that are taken for granted among people who do not have disabilities, and as you have heard this morning, are things that we are really still fighting for and able to ensure that parents with disabilities are treated equally with all others. I am a proud parent with a disability. And I think from listening to the words we've heard today, there are two messages that are really emerging as themes in addition with that flexibility we've all experienced. And that is this, that a parent with a disability is just that, a parent. And every single one of us are equally ill-equipped when we are first confronting those incredible bundles of joy that come into our life. And so that we, like every other parent, have to go through that lifetime experience of learning and growing, and it is individual to us whether or not we have disabilities. And we share many, many of those same joys, the wonder, the concern, and yes, sometimes the frustration and challenges that go along with parenting. And so I give a shout out to every person who is listening to us today who is a parent with a disability, as to all parents, because this is really the fundamental part, the fabric of our nation and the value of our family life. So I was counseled more than 30 years ago not to have children. I was told by very well-meaning professionals that I could not handle it as a blind American and that I should not undertake this very big decision. Well, 30 years later, I have three children, ages 22 to 30. Two of them are looking forward to marriages in the next 18 months. And as overwhelming as that is, I can tell you with certainty that I am eternally grateful that I had the response to the word no 30 years ago, which I pretty much have even to this day when someone tells me I can't do something. And that is to say, in this America, in the 21st century, we just ask how we can make things happen. And we don't settle for, no, you can't do that. Thank you. So the flip side of this coin is equally important, and it was so eloquently stated by our first speaker, Alex Reeve Gibbon, when she said that the role of the child of a parent with a disability is also something that we need to consider. So here's the same self-evident truth. Our children, born and raised by parents with disabilities, grow up to be smart, independent, compassionate, and inclusive. And isn't that the way we want every child in this country to grow up, and the most that we can possibly hope for? So if you need to look any further for examples, I draw your attention to the story of our First Lady, Michelle Obama, who speaks so frequently and with such grace and ease about her experience in being a child of a parent with a disability. So here's the thing. I know I'm speaking to the choir here, but with all of these truths that are so evident to us, then why is it that we are hearing this shocking statistic over and over that in 37 states, parents with disabilities may be presumed unfit to parent? That was the genesis of the report Rocking the Cradle. As you know, it is lengthy because it addresses in depth many of the personal stories of parents with disabilities and really gets into the weeds in terms of what we need to do to turn this around. But 4 years later, we are still facing the same statistic. So to borrow a phrase from my millennial children, it is time to distill this down and take this message viral. And so I am so grateful to Robin and to Rachel Patterson, who's going to kick it off for us today as we wait for Robin, who have made it possible for us to issue this toolkit so that when Each of us leaves the room today, and everyone who is watching around the country is finished with what we are discussing today. We can take this out into the world and make sure that everybody knows that it is time to change that statistic and ensure that parents with disabilities and their children are equally included in every aspect of our society. Rachel, you want to take it from here?
So, as we know, I wasn't supposed to be up here by myself. I really, really hope Robin will get here soon because she's the smarts, the brain. She knows everything about this issue, and she was a really, really fantastic partner. I learned so much from the report she wrote in 2012 and was so glad to be able to take it into a new format. One of the reasons she's not here yet, in addition to security and bomb threats, is because she's waiting for an accessible cab, which just reminds me we have so much work to do. But today, we're here to talk about parents. Robin and I planned our presentation collaboratively, and so if she was here, she'd go first and tell you about the statistics that 80% of parents with psychiatric or intellectual disabilities have their children removed. Removal rates of 80%. 13% of parents with physical disabilities report discrimination in child welfare. She would tell you a story of a blind Missouri couple that had their two-day-old daughter taken into custody after the mother had difficulty breastfeeding, which most mothers, I understand, experience. She would tell you the story of Katie O'Neill, a veteran and quadriplegic, who had her boyfriend filed for custody and when her son was 10 days old, saying that, you know, Kaney couldn't possibly serve as a mother. I'm hoping when Robin gets here, she'll tell you even more detail. But what I wanted to talk about was to say that these stories are exactly why the Reeve Foundation knew that we had to get involved in this issue. As we heard earlier, our namesake, Christopher Reeve, had three children, and he wrote beautifully about their lives together, both before and after his injury, including his own surprise at how acquiring a disability both did and did not change his role as a parent. Dana Reeve, his wife, also dedicated herself to supporting families and caregivers. And at the Reeve Foundation, we think that if you're supporting families, you should support the whole family to stay together whenever possible. Not, you know, these policies and these organizations support people with disabilities, and these policies and these organizations support their family members without disabilities. I'm a family member of someone with a disability. I don't think that really makes any sense. I think we should be about supporting whole families, to stay together, and that ensuring the rights of parents with disabilities to stay parents is central to that mission. Unfortunately, as we've discussed all throughout today, these violations of civil rights against parents continue across our nation and too often continue unnoticed. People maybe who don't work in the disability community aren't in this room are shocked to learn that these laws are still on the books and how often this occurs. So from the foundation, our efforts here today are twofold. We want to release this toolkit, but we also here, I think we know we're here to do something bigger. The toolkit has the idea of getting information into the hands of people. We want people to be empowered to know how disability law intersects with family and custody law and where it's there to protect them. And empower them in doctor's offices and lawyer's offices, in courtrooms and classrooms to know what their rights are. But we also want to start a bigger conversation and raise awareness of this issue in a way that spurs action. So the toolkit itself covers the major areas where parents and prospective parents face barriers and discrimination: reproductive health care, adoption and foster care, child welfare, family courts, and custody determinations. It describes how disability law protects people, but also the places where disability law falls short. But where states have fallen short. We pay special attention to Native American communities because of intersecting discrimination and biases that they may face, and the really sad history of their children being removed from their homes and communities. And finally, we connect people with their local Centers for Independent Living to get involved in that local advocacy that's going to change laws on the state level. But of course, like I said, this is bigger than one document. This is just the first step. With this, we want more people to understand these egregious violations of civil rights that are occurring across our nation and the need to change these laws. So to do that, we're starting today. We're working with the National Council on Disability to generate new policy ideas, and I loved our last panel at saying, okay, what do we do? Is it a law? Is it a regulation? I think that's the point where we are, to say, okay, what is the thing? What's the thing we need to do? We're working with the National Council on Independent Living, like I just said, to make sure that our advocates are connected at the state and local level to make local change. We just awarded our highest level grant through our Quality of Life Grant Awards this cycle to Through the Looking Glass, to specifically for adaptive baby care in the Bay Area, but we hope to work with them more on additional issues and all the great work that they do. We're working with the Administration for Community Living, which funds the Paralysis Resource Center located at the Reeve Foundation and funded this toolkit. We're working with ACL to connect with other ACL grantees and federal partners to promote parents' rights. And we're really looking forward to joining forces with new projects like Robin Powell and Kara Ayer's Disabled Parenting Project. They're new on the scene, but it's very, very exciting to get to work with them. This issue hits home to us, I think, like you've heard throughout the day, and we're really committed to working on it. Should we? Robin is here. Great.
Talk about great entrances and perfect timing. My thanks to Rachel Patterson, who has come to us from the Reeve Foundation. The Reeve Foundation has been instrumental in making the issuance of this toolkit possible. And it really feels appropriate now that we give this round of applause to Robin Powell. She was the critical factor in the research and writing of Rocking the Cradle. She has been a constant promoter. She is emeritus to the National Council on Disability, now pursuing her PhD in law. Let's give a big round of applause to Robin Powell.
It's kind of a maze through EEOB. Not right now, but through the Paralysis Resource Center, we do translate several of most of our materials, at least into Spanish, and then into other languages as requested. Oh, sorry. For those who didn't hear the question, I guess I should repeat it. It was if the toolkit was going to be available in other languages. I'll take this opportunity to also mention here in the room, we have the toolkit printed out in a glossy format and in Braille. And online, there's a plain language version meant to be cognitively accessible to everyone.
Well, we're waiting for Robin. Does anyone have any more questions for Rachel? I am also uniquely ill-equipped to take waving hands, so I encourage you to just give me a shout out.
If we work together, I think Robbie Bell had a question.
Anything for parents who are in prison?
That's a good question. What she asked was if we had anything for parents who are in prison. Not right now, but I think that that's a good idea.
Hold on. So let me give you just a couple more moments of background as we wait for Robin to join us. When Rocking the Cradle was first being discussed at the NCD back in 2011, there was a very strong feeling among the council members that this was kind of uncharted territory in terms of national disability policy. And none of us really could understand why, but we all felt equally encouraged that this was something in which we could really have a positive impact and change in a very positive, disruptive way, many lives around the country and by implication then around the world. We conceived of the report in four different sections. They went together in halves. The first half that really discussed child welfare and custody, and the second half that addressed adoption and reproductive rights. What we discovered as the research proceeded, and there was a whole team, including many members of the NCD staff that are still here or who have moved on, many council members. I think I'm probably the only surviving council member that was on the original team, which just is testimony to my advanced age and the fact that the gray hairs that I sport are not entirely due to those of the interesting challenges I sometimes face as a parent with three children. But it was very clear to us early on that what we were really tapping into was an urgent and critical need to create public awareness and bring attention to the changes that needed to be made. In very, very short time period, stories began flooding into the NCD that spoke to us about parents who, because of a divorce situation, found that they unexpectedly were denied custody of their children, that child welfare judges were not educated to the accommodations that would make it seamless for a parent with disability to continue to care for their child, presumptions made against and around the foster care system. And really most astonishingly to me, and I don't know why that was so, because I did confront this personally, the presumptions that are made in terms of a lack of reproductive rights and the difficulties that a parent seeking to adopt a child may face both in the domestic and the international forums. So this is my way of explaining to you why this report exceeded 400 pages. And as important as this toolkit is, it is the way to really open the book on the issue. So we've heard over and over this morning the question, what can we do? What can we do? Well, here it is. This is what we can do. We can take this toolkit. We can make sure every single state has it in the appropriate offices. We can work with the federal agencies to ensure that, to the extent possible, federal oversight encourages the recognition of parents and their rights when they are parents with disabilities, and the rights of children to remain with their families. Think that, Rachel, if you want to maybe guide us a little bit step by step through what we can do with the toolkit when we take it away with it, then perhaps we will either have Robin with us or we will reconvene at a later time to hear what she's got to say to us. Thanks.
Thanks. And I wanted to add, when Jannie was speaking, I was working in disability here in D.C. in 2012, and the report really did change things. It was something that kind of wasn't on, you know, that issue agenda, that list people have in their head of what issues we need to be working on. Parents with disabilities wasn't there. And there's several other people who played a really important role in that. But getting an organization like the National Council on Disability to come out and say, this is important, here are all the problems we're facing, and this is why we have to work on it. As for the toolkit itself, it's designed to be both educating for people who don't know about this issue and empowering for people who are facing it in their lives right now. You can flip exactly to whatever issue you're facing, whether it be adoption or reproductive technology or custody determination, and see how the law applies to them, applies to you. I also have the vision of, say you're going through a divorce and you have a family law attorney who probably isn't an expert on disability law, being able to take this in and it includes, you know, the reference. Okay, this is the law you need to look at. This is how you as a lawyer can best represent me, a person with a disability. Oh, and I see Robin. I'm really, really glad that Robin is here. I was, with her permission, going to maybe read some remarks, but it will be absolutely better for you to hear it directly from her.
As promised, Robin Powell.
Okay, so I won't mention that. Oh, my God.
Who are you?
I'm good. Well, I guess this here goes nothing. Sorry that I'm frazzled. Thank you to the White House and the National Council on Disability for holding this important event and for inviting the Disabled Parenting Project to participate. For those of you who don't know us, the Disabled Parenting Project is an online community by and for parents and prospective parents with disabilities, and I encourage folks to check us out online at www.disabledparenting.com. I also want to thank the Reeve Foundation for developing this toolkit. The toolkit will be an invaluable resource for the entire disability community, and we owe the Reeve Foundation tremendous gratitude for spearheading this event. I'd like to begin and end by sharing a brief personal story. Earlier this week, I had published an article on the website ExoJane about my desire to someday be a mother and the negative reactions I encountered from doctors. Unfortunately, I broke my own personal rule and read some of the comments, something you should never do. Many of the comments were truly awful and illustrate the biases people with disabilities experience when choosing to raise families. For instance, one lovely commentator said, this particular woman clearly is highly intelligent, so there is a physical aspect to take into account, and I do not just mean bringing the fetus to term and through active labor, but I mean the everyday grind of taking care of an infant. If she and her partner both have chronic pain conditions or some type of physical disability, the challenges of raising a small child are huge. Can you pay for a 24/7 nurse to do the tough physical work of child rearing? Have you spent a significant amount of time with small children testing how your body does taking care of them? These are just real world questions to think about outside of whatever disability activist philosophy you have. When it comes down to it, can you feed, lift, bathe, carry, and chase after a child? If not, you probably shouldn't have or adopt children, in my personal estimation. Ignorant remarks such as this and the many others that were made depict the significant biases we face, biases that are also often harbored by child welfare workers, judges, doctors, family members, lawmakers, our neighbors, etc. Although the right to raise a family has long been recognized as one of the most fundamental rights we have in our nation, this right has not yet been enjoyed by people with disabilities. Indeed, parents with disabilities are the only distinct community of Americans who must struggle to retain, and at times even gain, custody of our children. Studies have found that parents with psychiatric and intellectual disabilities, of course, experience it the worst, with removal rates as high as 80%. And parents who are deaf, blind, or have physical disabilities also experience extremely high rates of child removal and loss of parental rights. Parents with disabilities are also more likely to lose custody of their children after divorce, resulting in many women with disabilities staying in bad and sometimes dangerous marriages out of fear they will lose their children. And of course, this is not just about the numbers, but actual families who have been torn apart or not even given the chance to be formed due to stereotypes and discrimination. For example, in 2010, a blind Missouri couple had their two-day-old daughter taken into custody by the state after the mother had difficulty breastfeeding, something most new mothers experience. In other words, the state took their daughter not because of abuse, but rather just fear that the parents would not be able to care for their daughter. This couple had to fight for 57 days just to get custody of their daughter, meaning they lost 2 months together. In 2009, Kaney O'Neill, a veteran and quadriplegic mother, faced an unexpected battle when her former boyfriend filed custody of their 10-week-old daughter, alleging that she was not a fit and proper person to take care of her son, and that her disability greatly limited her ability to care for the minor or even wake up if the minor was distressed. She endured over a year and a half battle before she was finally able to get custody of her daughter. And while there was a happy ending in that story, it was terrifying and horrifying that courts would allow someone to question a parent's ability to have custody based solely on their disability. There are countless stories also of people with disabilities who were prohibited from adopting or becoming foster parents, as well as women with disabilities who are often denied reproductive health care because physicians deem us unfit to be parents. We must come together as a community to end this discrimination, and I'm hoping that the toolkit will be a great step forward. Thank you.
Do we have questions for Robin?
How was your morning?
Oh, you don't want to know.
Well said. Anyone else? Remember, you got to shout it out to us.
Hi, Robin. This is Camilla. I'm just wondering, will there be a part two? Because I know that there is probably additional information and things coming down with regards to parenting and rights.
My dissertation someday. That's a good question. I think that the reason is that when programs and policies were being set up for people with disabilities, it was just never expected that we would have children. You know, independent living meant you got an apartment somewhere, maybe with a roommate, and then that was that. No one ever considered that we would want more. And now that we're 25 years past the ADA passing, I think that we not only want it, but we expect it. And I think that it's time that providers, including disability providers, catch up on that.
Thank you to Rachel and Robin. We're going to make that the last question as we are continuing to adjust our agenda today to be sure that we get everything that we need to discuss out in the open. So now we've got Rocking the Cradle. It's time to rock the nation. I want to thank both Rachel and Robin for their hard work on the toolkit, and I really look forward to working with everyone in this room and everyone who's listening to be sure that we make sure that the changes that need to be made are heard and are implemented as we go forward. Thank you, everyone. Maria?
Thank you so much, Jenny, Rachel, and Robin, especially Robin. So as we close out, I'm going to take a bit of MC privilege and say a few things. Like many of the families you've heard from today, of the people you've heard from today, I come from a mixed disability family. My siblings and I have a whole host of diagnoses and identities that we own. And my brother called me last night. Now, I'm an older sister. How many oldest siblings do we have in the room? Quite a few. So when you get a call from your youngest sibling, my immediate reaction is, oh no, what's wrong? Right? And he was actually just calling to see if I could send him a picture of the president. But he asked me, Maria, what are you doing? What's going on? And my brother has disabilities that impact his ability to read, very severe disabilities. and he's encountered a number of barriers throughout his life because of that. But he has a young son, and he's expecting his second son in September. And so I said, John Henry, tomorrow we're convening this forum on the civil rights of parents with disabilities. And I said, this applies to you. And he says, what? And I said, well, I explained many of the examples that you've heard this morning to John Henry. And even though I couldn't see him, I could hear his eyes get big. And he goes, Maria, that is so messed up. He did not use that word. He used something a little bit more colorful. Maria, that is so messed up. And that moment is not a moment that many people with disabilities can have as they are beginning to build their families. Because oftentimes, we are the only ones in our families who are disabled. And so today, you've heard that this issue of civil rights for parents with disabilities is much broader than the potential mothers or fathers that are out there. It applies to family members who might be seeking to make sure that their loved one does not enter the foster care system, or people who are seeking to adopt. But we also have to make sure that every single parent of a child with a disability, every single family member of someone with a disability understands their rights and responsibilities and understands that as they are raising their own children with disabilities, that in addition to educational and academic success and having a meaningful career, someone can also have a thriving, loving family. And so one of the big questions I want to pose to all of you today is how do we make sure that every American understands that all Americans can have families, right? So with that, I hope that you will continue the conversation. Again, hashtag PWDParents. And thank you all for being here, for lending your time, your energy, and your expertise. Here's to future convenings on this topic. Thank you.